Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. This is the Thursday, November 8th edition. You can always find us online and look for our podcast later on today. No guest? We have no guest? Well, that's not good. Well, producer Matt, you're looking at me like you don't know what I should do. Or what are you doing? What's up?
Just, trying to do the fade out, trying to get the call, trying to talk to you. Lots of, I need more hands is what I need.
All right.
I can try to call back. I just have a bad feeling.
Okay.
If you want to filibuster for a minute.
No, you filibuster and I will look to make sure I had the right phone number. Go ahead.
Well, it was the right phone number, but I don't know if it was the right extension. It went to a voicemail.
6894 6894. That looks right.
Filibustering. If I just say filibustering over and over, does that count as filibustering?
No, it isn't. I can't do that because that wasn't the person who said that they would be here. And
so I guess I'm still filibustering, and it's really just me talking about the word.
This is directly from her website, and it looks all the same. Huh. Okay. This is live radio at its finest.
I wonder if I look up filibuster,
can
the
you
definition.
Call us?
Is it just something done in government, or is it something anyone can do?
Define. 8255.
Define filibuster.
Thanks. There we go. Okay.
It's a race. Action of... Oh.
Go ahead. No, you first. After you.
I was just going to read the dictionary definition of filibuster.
What is a filibuster, Matt Brand?
Okay. An action such as a prolonged speech that obstructs progress in a legislative assembly while not technically contravening the required procedures.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah.
Can you repeat it so we can fill some more time?
Okay, so I can go slow too.
No, don't do it. I was just being a jerk. Just being a fool. Just being a fool.
Want me to try that number again? You want to try filibustering? It's fun.
I sent her an email, the woman who's supposed to be our guest. And because the phone number that's on the contact page on Ryerson University Library and Archives is exactly the same one that's written on the show page.
Someone's calling.
Yeah,
that's not her, though.
That's not Toronto area code. Well, we can see maybe it's somebody who has something they want to add to the broadcast here today. We're going to talk about site selection of schools, education, Claudia Chender. I like Claudia. She's a very down-to-earth human who has a lot of passion for education. And she's in the House. She's a member of the NDP caucus. And perhaps she has more information that she'd like to share with us. We spoke with Jin Yi. Jin, the chair of the PACE, Provincial something-something Center Excellence Education, something, whatever it's called.
That's actually Claudia on the line now. I don't know if we want to go to her early, if she's ready for that.
Oh, well, that could work. I mean, hey, I'll take any help we can get, especially this time of the day. So, again, I had this whole thing about Viola Desmond 72 years ago today. Was nabbed by the tax person, the tax man. Oh, now she's gone. What happened? That's weird.
I accidentally hung up on her. Things are going great right now.
Oh,
Claudia, if you're listening.
I can't wait till your show goes on the air.
I think that's her.
Okay. When 72 years ago, Viola Desmond entered the Roseland Theater in New Glasgow, sat in the whites only section, was charged for evading taxes, and then the whole story. So we are still hoping to connect with someone who's looking at criminal justice firsts, researchers at Ryerson, creating a first website dedicated to that. That hopefully will happen. But not right this very second, because it sounds like we'll be talking. What?
Claudia's ready to join us. She heard us drowning live on air, so she was being really nice and gave us a call.
See, that's what I said. She's a good human being who likes to participate and help us not look bad. Claudia Chender, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Sheldon?
Very well, very well. We had a chance to talk about education with Jin Yi. We had him on the show, and he doesn't feel that there's a huge amount of secrecy. I know you want to talk about site selection. We're going to do that. But I thought this whole, and I keep getting it wrong, all these changes, all these words, the Provincial Association.
The Provincial Advisory Council on Education.
Glad you were paying attention.
That's the one. That's why I get paid the big bucks, Sheldon.
When we had Jin telling us, they ran out of time on their first meeting. They have a lot to do. They answered to the minister, but he felt they weren't beholden to government. So what do you make of this change and what it may or may not do for openness and transparency for education?
Well, Sheldon, I think the significant change that we really can't lose sight of was the abolition of elected school boards. Mm-hmm. So we had an elected order of government, essentially, an elected body that doesn't exist anymore. And that's the main change. And so things got a bit confused because this new advisory council was announced at the same time. And so I think in a lot of people's minds, it was a replacement. So people thought, okay, we don't have a school board, but we have this other thing that's like a school board. And the reality is that that's just not true. So the Provincial Advisory Council on Education is a group that advises the minister. They don't have authority particularly. And so, you know, I think myself and many others are hopeful. There are some very bright folks on that council, many of whom have served in elected capacity in the past. And I think, you know, we're all hopeful that they will be they'll be called upon by the minister to offer him that advice and that, you know, where it's advisable, he'll take it. But the reality is that independently, you know, that body can't particularly do anything. I think the reason that we're pushing for transparency is that with the loss of school boards, there's no place, there's no forum for parents and concerned citizens to sort of access or understand the changes that are happening in Nova Scotia in education, aside from press releases, really, you know? So we thought, well, at least if these folks, if we could hear what's happening, if we can hear the conversation, at least we know what's going on, right?
I get the sense there is at least an appetite by members of the committee, including the chair, to make it more open, more transparent, to have the minutes published or perhaps the agenda posted online ahead of time. And as Jen and I discussed, school board meetings used to be open to the public. No one showed up unless there was a school closure issue. Not to a person, but for the most part. So, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have that opportunity. I'm just wondering, they're still growing. They're still learning. Maybe this is a work in progress.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think it probably is. I mean, I think the big difference was that anyone who had an issue with education with the click of a button or back in the day, the flick of the phone book could find the phone number for their school board representative and talk to them about it. They can't do that anymore. And although there is regional representation on this body, it's not representation that's in any way accessible by the public, and it's not designed to be. So it may be that people didn't show up, except for when they were talking school closures, which at some point will be a nice segue into the site selection conversation.
Yep.
But the reality is that they didn't need to in the same way. Because if there were issues they cared about, there was a direct avenue for them to access information and also relay feedback on those issues.
Correct.
And that's not there anymore.
We've got Claudia Chender here, the NDP education spokesperson. And the enhanced SACs, we're still learning how that will work, what it'll smell like, how effective or ineffective it may or may not be. I mean, we're, again, trying to find our way in the dark. And I have a sense that eventually it will come to a balance, or won't. I think parents who are committed enough and are dedicated enough will try their darndest to make access or perhaps make contact with the people who make the difference. When we're talking about school location, school construction, that has always been a bit of a government decision. And we also wanted to talk about site selection. And I understand it's kind of like that whole in-camera thing. If you're negotiating for land, we don't want people driving up the price on speculation if word leaks out. But that said, you're asking for what? Musquinoba Harbor in particular, a group that we spoke with earlier this week, they want a school in their neighborhood. What's wrong with that?
Right. Right. I mean, again, I think it's more of, you know, my focus in this conversation is much more on the process than it is on the specifics. So, you know, the reality is that in any school closure conversations are hugely contentious and site selection conversations are hugely contentious because there's all kinds of reasons that people want a public amenity, especially one like a school in their neighborhood. And there's all kinds of benefits that come from that. And so I think it's very rarely sort of a cut and dried situation. That being said, there are certainly some principles that could apply and that should apply But, you know, there was a long amount of time spent developing a really good school review process that really engaged, you know, teachers, SACs, parents, and the public. And all of that, as far as we can tell, has essentially been flushed down the toilet. So we have been promised, since the government released their rolling capital plan, that, you know, that we were told that when this capital plan came out a few months ago, that this was based on what had been the recommendations of the school boards. There's some question about that. We've heard some conflicting reports. Mm-hmm. But now, and that there would eventually be a public process, but we have yet to hear what that public process is. And what the government has said and what the minister has said is that he doesn't want to hold up the process. So he's insinuating that by engaging the public, it stops schools from being built. And that is not the case. We know that's not the case. There may be a couple outliers where those conversations went on, you know, longer than communities would have liked. But if they did so, it was for an important reason, right? Hmm. So, you know, I think Muscadet Harbor is a great example where they're now talking, you know, as far as I understand it, you know, there was some information floated, you know, including the, you know, MLA for the area, the Speaker of the House, Kevin Murphy, yep, around opening a school in a business park, as opposed to where the current school is, which is sort of in the heart of the community. And now you have people organizing and advocating around putting it back there. And with that, you know, I don't know that community well enough to say where the school should go. Although I think, you know, if you look at things like the health of a small town and how we keep our rural communities vibrant, there's really great arguments to have schools in communities and not on highways in between communities, which, right, you know, has been the mode the last couple decades. But, you know, it's great that that area can organize and advocate for itself in the way that it has, but not every community can do that, and nor should they have to. I mean, I think in general, it's incumbent upon governments to engage their citizens and to understand what they want and whether they're making good decisions. And time again, that doesn't happen with this government. And so this seems to be the latest example. And, you know, as a parent of three kids in school, I think it's very disheartening. It's like parents want to have a say in what happens with their kids' education, and they want to know what's going on in education in general.
We've been trying to keep that conversation going. It's sometimes a challenge, but in the end, at the end of the day, it's going to be the government who decides, the minister, the Department of Education, based on recommendations. So I guess we'll just keep driving people to contact their MLA, speak with their school advisory councils, speak with the school principal, do what you can. Try to keep knocking on the door till they answer, or knock the door down if you have to.
Absolutely. And I mean, contact the, you know, your regional education center, which is formerly the school board, and contact the Department of Education. I mean, contact your MLA is fine, but if someone contacts me, which they do all the time, I'm playing the same phone tag that a parent is playing, only I'm just more likely to get my calls returned, yeah, for various reasons. But you know, I think we're very much in this game of who do I call when, and will they call me back, and will they not call me back? And I just think there's no excuse for that in this day and age. You know, I think we need a clear line of accountability and a clear line of accessibility, and we don't have either.
Claudia Chender, thanks for the lifeline. Thanks for throwing
thanks
us a life preserver, and we'll keep the conversation going. Thanks.
My pleasure. Okay. Bye-bye, Sheldon.
Claudia is the education spokesperson for the NDP and a member in the Dartmouth. So Mandisa is here. Good. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a few seconds, and the show will go on. We'll be back after this break. We should have done this earlier. If you want tickets to tomorrow night's Mooseheads game in Halifax, hosting the Screaming Weasels, 902-405-6000, provided you can get here to get the tickets before 4 o'clock tomorrow, and we'll make it caller number 10. All right, 902-405-6000. As mentioned, exactly 72 years ago today, Viola Desmond was arrested at the Roseland Theatre in New Glasgow, and many called her, Canada's Rosa Parks, but in fact, Rosa Parks is America's Viola Desmond. On the line with us to talk a little bit about documenting criminal justice firsts, we're joined by Mandisa Arlane, and Mandisa is with Ryerson, I believe. How are you? And glad we were able to connect today.
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
So this website, what are you hoping to do? What is it that you hope to teach us?
We are hoping to basically document the Indigenous and racialized individuals who were the first to enter policing, corrections, and the judiciary. And so as trailblazers within the Canadian criminal justice system, these individuals faced hardships and challenges. And so we're just hoping to take that information and put it into a website that folks can then access.
The website has been up and live for some time. Tell me about the people that you were able to include in this.
Okay. It's been up now since mid-October. We're still working on collecting profiles. So far, we have 12 profiles featured on the website, 5 for policing, 6 for the courts, and 1 for corrections. We have found it very difficult to find profiles for Indigenous and racialized folks in corrections.
Why do you think that is?
Historically, folks of color and Indigenous folks, their contributions have not necessarily been recognized, and when they have contributed, those contributions were trivialized or minimized. And so in terms of just documenting lived experiences and professional experiences, that could be one reason.
Clearly, there would be documentation on those who would be perhaps at the bench, those who were serving. So where are you finding, how are you able to locate these people?
And so through Ryerson's library, mm-hmm. we have access to databases like ProQuest and EBSCO and Google Scholar, which we can go into and look. But then there's also associations and different websites and web spaces where this information can be found also.
And also there's a big yellow button in the middle that says who is missing in criminal justice or in policing, and you can click on that and make your own submission, perhaps someone in your family, a story that you know about.
Correct. Yeah. And we welcome those, even if you don't have all the information or you're not even sure whether it's a criminal justice first. If you share it with us, if you send it to us, we will vet the information and we will put it up if it's appropriate.
Mandisa from Ryerson's, thank you for doing this, and we're glad we were able to finally connect today.
Thank you. Thank you for featuring the website.
Take care. Mandisa Arlane is a librarian with Ryerson University, where they are responsible for this website. If you want to find out more, just do a search on the Ryerson.ca website, or just look for criminal justice firsts. That's it. No more. All done. Producer Matt, can you tell us who got these 2 tickets to tomorrow night's game?
You know, I really have to start writing down these names.
Oh, darn.
Oh, wait a sec.
Oh, you found it.
Oh, I did write it down. I don't know. That's a really bad joke. Barry Crotty. Congratulations, Barry.
Hey, Barry.
You're going to the Mooseheads.
Going to the herd. Hear the herd. Just can't stop the herd. That's all the time we have. Producer Matt Brand is going to, share a few stories on his own show, but we might be able to squeeze a couple out of them tomorrow.
It's like over a week away. Let's just calm down.
No, you calm down. You're not making me calm down. I ain't calm down.
My headphones came unplugged. What's that?
You're all good. Thanks, Matt Brand.
Some people say we're disorganized. Isn't that weird?
What? Where did I leave that? Oh, we're all done. Tomorrow, 12:30, same bat time. Oh, wait, no, somebody else uses that. If you don't have a catchphrase, no one will remember your show. See you tomorrow.